Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong, profitable impact on your business.
Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and each week I am honored to share the microphone with the most interesting business leaders who have wonderful stories to share, and they are here on Your Partner in Success Radio to freely share their journeys, their business wisdom, their tips, and their actionable advice. In short, they are willing to help us shorten our learning curve as we navigate the know, like, and trust economy. And in fact, my guests are so compelling and so insightful that this podcast was recently written up on Inc.com as one of the best business podcasts you need to be listening to now and has been mentioned on Entrepreneur and MSNBC. And our topic today is the internet lifestyle, how to earn more, work less, and enjoy life with Terry Dean. Now, Terry Dean has a fascinating story. He went from delivering pizzas for $8 an hour to creating a full-time income online in 1996, which in internet years, that's like, you know, decades ago, but that's how quick things go. So in the past 20 years, he has personally helped thousands of clients set up profitable internet lifestyles in hundreds of different markets through both his private and group coaching programs. He also helps small business entrepreneurs attract high-quality clients, spot conversion cracks on their websites, and earn a big income, even from very small email lists. His motto is, of course, earn more, work less, and enjoy life. Now, this is a follow-up interview to one that we did in September of last year, 2017, called How to Sell Without Selling. Be sure to check it out, as Terry shared a ton of information that online marketers can use, no matter where they are in their entrepreneurial journey. Terry, welcome back. It's a pleasure to speak with you again.
It's great to be here again.
You have a ton of information to share with people, but before we go down that road, tell people a bit about yourself. It's one thing to say you had an $8, you know, kind of a beginner job, but then you went to somebody who is very well known in the marketing sphere on the internet. You have a very excellent reputation. How did you do that? I mean, what made you go, you know, I don't want to do this for the rest of my life?
Well, I said that a lot. I'll say that before I started online. I said a lot of times that I can't do this. I can't keep doing this. And, you know, I tried to find other ways out because I had done other jobs before the $8 an hour little pizza delivery job. Like I tried to sell credit cards in front of – signing people up for credit cards in front of Sears. I did other little dead-end jobs. And I ended up at Little Caesars. And during that process, I had also tried to do something to create my own business. Like I had tried network marketing. I was horrible at network marketing, primarily because all these network marketing companies told you, hey, join our program and you don't have to sell anything. Well, guess what?
Oh, MLM?
Yep.
Yeah, you wind up with a bunch of vitamins in the garage that you chuck away 5 years later.
I had it. It was my basement. I had it full of different junk in the basement. All of them said, you know, you don't have to sell, but you had to sell. And I was not good at selling. I am. It's kind of hard, you know, when we're online and you can see us talking on here. It doesn't show as much, but I am a serious introvert. Okay, so well, think about what I do.
We talked about that. I don't want to be out among people. I like to be all by myself, left alone. That's why you're not going to see my picture on the internet. You're not going to see me on YouTube. I can talk, and I'm not shy, but I do not want to do all of that stuff that, you know, people say, oh, you've got to do this. You've got to, you know, you've got to be on YouTube. You have to. No, I don't. I do just fine.
Think of it this way. It sounds like it almost sounds like we have psychological problem, because what do we do for a living? I sit at home talking to myself. That's what I do for a living. I sit at home talking to myself on audio. You know, I'll turn a video camera on at home alone. I don't like doing live. But at home, alone, I'll turn the video camera on, turn the audio on, talk. That's what I do. But so I was back in that process, and none of that worked for me. And I that was early on in the internet, and I heard some stories of people who succeeded online, or they were beginning, you know, like early stories of people succeed. You know, and I was like, this is something I could do because it's not going to require me to actually talk to anyone. I can go online, don't have to talk to anyone. And so I got online, and the first thing that I sold online was I actually bought licenses to some VHS videos, like self-help videos. Like I remember one of them was Mark Victor Hansen, and there were some others in that package, you know, and I started selling those. I put up my ugly websites and I started selling those videos. And my first big breakthrough was a few months in when I started putting together an email list. And it took me about 6 months to realize just how important that email list was. But I started building the email list, and all of my sales were coming from the email list because that gave me the opportunity to do what you said at the beginning of the program, was to get people to know, like, and trust me through the email list. And again, it didn't require me to do anything live. I didn't have to talk to people directly. I could sit in my office, write something, you know, edit it later. And I love the fact that when we write, every one of us has those issues where we say something and, you know, later on that day or the next day, you come back, you know, I wish I would have said this instead. But when we write, we get to do that. We get to go back and edit what we really edited. And so it's always fit me well. And so that was really the big start for me, was the email. And then so I started building my list. I started concentrating on that, started selling those products. Eventually I created some of my own products. And then probably the next really big breakthrough was when I was invited to some internet marketing conferences. And again, remember introvert going to internet marketing conferences. But I call it a trial by fire, because my first time speaking in front of an audience, it was at a Ron LeGrand event at an information marketing boot camp. I think it was the information marketing boot camp. I also spoke at internet marketing boot camps for him. It's one of those two that I spoke at first. But he put me on stage for 4 hours and said, take a break sometime during this. Take one break. And you speak for 4 hours. Mm-hmm. Here you go.
Oh. No. I just, Terry, did a whole body frisson. I literally just shuddered. It's like, oh, my God.
So people actually told me that they saw me, my hands literally shaking while I was up there speaking. And so I did this conference. Again, selling in person was not something I was good at. So I taught for the 4 hours. I took the break. I shook the whole time. Mostly I told stories, told what I've been doing. Here's what's working. Here's what's not working. And then you were supposed to sell at the end of the event. So I like sold a product at the end of the event. Nobody did anything. Nobody got up or anything. Ron LeGrand then got up and told, hey, everybody, you should go buy this. And then people ran to the back of the room to buy it. Okay. So that saved me from speaking there. But that became a big breakthrough for me, not to speaking as much, but Ron actually promoted the events by telling people in his ad copy, he said that they would see me doing an email at the events that I would earn at least $10,000 at the events. And I did that multiple times, always earning at least $10,000 from my own email list at the events, just from sales to my own email list during the event, which was usually Friday to Sunday. And then the big one that we talked about, the biggest one, came back at $96,250 over the weekend, which that one even surprised me when it happened that big. But built the reputation really on. At that time, I was selling, it was a training course that I had put together of teaching the online marketing, what I'd been doing. Mm-hmm. And I also offered licenses to the same course. So you could buy the course or you could buy licenses, which you could have sold as well. And we sold a ton of them right there on that weekend. And that was a great weekend for that. Just my own list. So that really built up the reputation. I also had, I think, probably the first membership site in the internet marketing world back with Net Breakthrough. I sold that in 2004. And from there, I took some time off in 2004. And then now, like for the last, I guess it would be about 12 years, I've been coaching a lot of entrepreneurs because I found myself getting bored just working on my own business. So now I work with clients directly. And that means I get to see what's working in golf, in tennis, in chiropractic, in real estate, all these different markets that I have clients in. It really keeps my curiosity filled. and what's working everywhere.
So you were able to find, by dint of just looking around for something that actually worked for you and that got you, you know, back kind of into your own comfort zone. Trust me, I get it. I mean, truly, and I tell this to anybody who will listen, the day that Amazon can deliver 30 pounds of live large crawfish and a head of cabbage to my door, I'm selling my car. I'm never going anywhere again. And I'm not, you know, I'm not that phobic. I really am a loner, and I need to be alone 98% of the time. That's where my happy zone is. And when I tried to be different, when I tried to do something like, yeah, I mean, just selling credit cards to people, I would have been hiding under their car. That would have been so difficult for me. But the odd thing is, I like people. I enjoy being around them. I'm not shy. I just need to be alone. And, you know, the people who know me well totally get that and they accept it. Other people are like, you don't sound like you're nuts. Probably I am. Who knows? Maybe it is a psychological issue. But, you know, like you, I finally found out where my sweet spot was and just dove into it. So I think that might be a very good lesson for our audience, don't you think? Find out what you're comfortable with. Find out what you're really good at, but don't get so comfortable that you're just doing it by rote. What do you think?
Yeah, that's definitely a principle, because you got to find something that, you know, I don't know if you could say comfortable. I'm a little wary of saying find something you're comfortable with, because I wasn't comfortable in the beginning, even writing the emails. You have to be, it's almost like find your talents and then make yourself uncomfortable there.
Oh,
in whatever your talent is.
Better. Yeah, that makes more sense, because if you get too comfortable, you get lazy.
You know, because gotcha. I don't think I've ever had a breakthrough where I was comfortable. Because, like, when I first started online, you know, I would have been comfortable in emails just teaching. Let's just teach what works. But just teaching does not sell, okay? You're not going to sell without selling if you just get up and teach in your emails. So I had to get out of the comfort zone there. Speaking was so far out of my comfort zone, but I would actually be decently comfortable with it now, as long as it's on a topic I know, like the back of my hand, where I can just get up and tell stories. If I had to go to and teach something I didn't know, I'm sure I'd still be terrified of that, but I could do this. And so you kind of work through your comfort zone. You have to advance on it. And as I said, so my talent really I found was in writing. So I worked on the writing, but I had to move out of my comfort zone in writing because I couldn't just teach.
Right. That makes sense. Okay. So I'm taking comfort off of the list, and thank you for that, because I was thinking, well, you know, if you find something that you're comfortable enough with to teach, maybe that's where I was going with that. Mm-hmm. Okay, so Terry, we're talking a lot about templates. Can you give us one or two template email ideas that we can use in our own email sequences? So I'll be very honest with you. When I have to write an email sequence, my hands just involuntarily lift off the keyboard, and then my butt comes out of my chair, and I leave the room. I hate doing those things.
Well,
isn't it sad? It's very. I can write anything but except. Good. I have no idea what my hang-up is with those.
Well, here's my little advice for that, because there's a lot of people who have that same feeling. Well, here's a good one, because I had a client, and this client said he wanted to write a book, and for him, you know, he just couldn't sit down and get it done. I showed him how to use the voice recognition software, which I personally don't use because I like writing, but I showed him how to use it. And the funny thing was, 30 days later, he came back with a 300-page book that he had finished because he got comfortable doing it. And what I was going to advise for, you know, if that's your concern with it, is don't sit down and write an email. It's almost just like imagine yourself talking to a friend, you know, that shows up. I know you're an introvert. I was going to say that you go out to the coffee shop and you spend a few minutes talking to a friend here. Or just
that.
On the phone. You know, someone that you're speaking to on
I
the phone.
I can only do 59 and three-quarter minutes. After that, I have to go. Must go now.
Well, then we don't need an email that long. You need a 5 to 10 minute email. That's what I'd do. So let me give you a template email that almost every client has in their same sequence. So you can just steal this directly because everybody's doing the same email here. Okay, the subject line for this email that we'd put in the sequence, usually this email goes, oh, maybe I'll put it second or third in your sequence. So it's pretty early. This email, maybe even fourth, so it's really early in the sequence. The subject line is, I need your help. That's the subject line. Take that subject line, I've tested it so many times and it still works. Like, I just looked at some of my best autoresponder messages, my best broadcast messages this morning, and I had an "I need your help" a couple of months ago, and it still beat everything again. "I need your help," because people really open that. And then here's the email that you could do, or there could be a little variation. I'll give a couple of them. Here's what the email says. "I'm making some cool new content for you right now. What's the biggest question you have about online marketing? Just click reply and let me know." Okay. You can make little variations to that. It could be, you know, I'm creating some upcoming videos for you, or, you know, whatever you're doing. And then you change the biggest question. It could be, "What's the biggest question you have about losing weight? What's the biggest question you have about your dental practice? What's the biggest challenge you're facing right now?" is how you can change that question. So it's a very simple, short email, and it accomplishes several purposes. The first purpose is, everybody knows that right now email has deliverability problems, which means it's tough to get your email into the inbox and actually show people's inboxes, not the Gmail promo box, not the spam folder, but actually showing up in people's email boxes. And you have a little bit of an advantage if you get people to reply to your message. So if they reply back to you and have a conversation with you, you're going to have a better chance of getting in their email, because it almost looks like it's a personal email going back and forth. You're going to get more emails in the inbox. So that's the first advantage. The second advantage is, people reply back to you, they're going to give you content and ideas for you to create for the future. You're actually surveying them really quickly. That's the second advantage. The third advantage is, many of my clients, especially if they sell higher ticket offers, like they sell coaching or consulting or done for you services of any type, is they'll actually start a contact back and forth. Somebody sends their biggest question, they'll give them maybe a quick answer to it, ask another question, they start a dialogue right there, and they end up making a sale by email. They maybe transfer it over to the phone or whatever else they need to close the sale, but that little conversation back and forth, that dialogue, becomes a sale. So that's three reasons we use that email, and I pretty much ask every client to put that in their first week of an autoresponder.
Mm-hmm. Now, and that's a great idea, because you know what I have found? That people genuinely do want to help other people. You know, it's just kind of a given. When you ask for assistance, most people are going to say, "Sure, how can I help you?" I mean, that's just how we operate as humans. So I have a quick question, though, is, how often do you do this to your list? I'm assuming that you have a segmented list and you have a lot of them. So is there any kind of cycle that you do this with?
Well, you probably would assume, if you think about my list, you probably would assume that it's more segmented than it really is, because I find that a lot of people get too much into segmenting. I use segmenting in the business, but not as much as a lot of people talk about it. A lot of people like make these really advanced email sequences, and all they end up doing is they create a whole bunch of work for themselves. Now they have all these separate lists. I have a separate list for all of my products that people buy. So there's a separate list for buyers of these products, which makes it nice. So I can mail to my entire list, exclude these people who bought this product, or you can email specifically to those people. Mm-hmm. But I send out to my two big email lists, the majority of messages go out to the majority of my list. Mm-hmm. The two lists are actually, one of them is a double opt-in list, the other one's a single opt-in list. I use single opt-in more often when doing paid advertising, because it's hard to get the confirmation with them. So most of my email messages actually go out to the entire list, and then I exclude out buyers. Instead of having tons of segmenting, which kind of, you know, wastes your time. But back to the question of, "I need your help," we have it in the actual autoresponder sequence. And then usually I think about doing it again, something similar, or asking different questions about every 6 months as a broadcast.
Well, and that was my question, because you don't want to have people go, "Oh, I've already done this." So having that 6 month kind of buffer, I think, makes a lot of sense.
Here's something really funny that people don't think about. If you send out an email that works really well, you should resend that email 6 months to a year later. I was tracking another email marketer that I know does really good. I know he tracks everything. And I was laughing because I tracked one subject line he had, and the same email was in it. And I saw the same email sent to me four times in 2 years, the exact same email, when I went and tracked it back. I was like, "Hey, you know what? I've read this before." And it's funny. Right. My clients do the same thing. We will resend it. Right now, I have a client where we put together his offers. So he has offer for like Black Friday. He has an offer for Christmas. He has an offer for Valentine's Day. And we created those all throughout the year. He has offers that go out each month. So he has emails in between, like content pieces, but then he has a specific offer. And we actually have him run almost the exact offer every year. And so multiple years in a row now, he's running almost the exact same emails for Black Friday each year with the same offer. Almost the same ones for Valentine's Day. Once he did that the first year, he kind of just reruns the same specials. That's part of our working less and enjoying everything, because guess what? It still works. Doing it again.
Okay, so is he changing up the offer in any substantial way, or is it largely the same offer with maybe just a little bit of updates?
It's the same offer with
maybe
there's an update or two, but I mean, some of those are the exact, some of those are even the exact same emails. I hope you're okay over there.
Yeah, sorry, was I coughing on you?
But you're having a cough. I had that about 2 weeks ago.
Oh, sorry. So. Am I coughing too much because I'm trying to mute?
Your cough is something. We noticed that we're listening to it. But
I'm sorry. I thought I muted before I started choking. Okay, so this is going to be one of those days. I'm telling you, but I might as well enjoy it, right? And I'm very raspy too, so that's why I'm coughing. Okay, so what is when he sends this kind of thing out? When he sends out the same email and it's still working, I'm guessing that there's no sales resistance, that everything is, you know, it's working. So, but if he does have, let's just use the same guy. If he does have sales resistance, what would he do? What would he change?
So let's define what I would define sales resistance as, so we're on the same page. I would define sales resistance meaning we didn't produce the same kind of sales we did last year, or we didn't produce within like 90% of the sales last year. I wouldn't, because this actually brings in a comment I kind of want to make. I'm going to take a little detour and then we can come back. And that detour is, I get a lot of questions about people who are like concerned about unsubscribes. They're really concerned because, you know, some people, they send out an offer, tons of people bought, but then some people unsubscribed, and they're upset about this. Or they sent out an email that had some personality in it. Maybe they even sent out a picture of their cat. Okay, here's my cat, and they told a story about it, and they link over to an offer, and then some people unsubscribe because they hate cats, for whatever reason they unsubscribe. And they get all upset about unsubscribes. I do not consider unsubscribes a problem. In fact, when clients tell me they have a problem with unsubscribes, I ask them, okay, I want you to go back and check these unsubscribes. Are they also buyers? I care if buyers unsubscribe. I just consider free subscribers unsubscribing part of the business. I don't worry about them. I also don't really worry about if I get, you know, a couple nasty comments from someone who just like, I hate you, or I hate everything you did, or how did I end up on your list, you blankety blank spammer, or those types of things. You get some of those no matter what. So those aren't sales resistance. Sales resistance means we're not making, you know, 80-90% of the sales we did last time we did it. If we had that happen, we didn't generate the same kind of sales, we probably wouldn't change the offer that time in most cases. The reason being is because I get what I call the heart attack curve most of the time with email promotions now. My list is probably the best example of this. So I run a special. Let's say whatever my special is, and like right now I'm running a special for people. I'm actually raising the price of my monthly club, which goes up on January the 31st. And with that special, that means every time I send an email going up to the January the 31st, I'm getting sales. People are joining. Mm-hmm. But my past history tells me from previous offers, and I'm thinking back to one I did most recently, I actually tracked last time I made an offer, like 7 days, 51% of my sales came in the last day. Okay? Most of those sales came in the last 12 hours.
Isn't that pretty common?
That's pretty common. I call it the heart attack curve because it makes me say, all week long, this special's not working. This special's not working. This special's not working. Wow, this special worked. And my wife could testify how many times I've said that before. I've almost grown out of it now, but not quite.
So is there any psychological reason why people do that? Because, I mean, I've heard this over and over again from marketers, and I've experienced it. You're waiting, and midnight, you're like, oh, man, this is a complete failure. And then all of a sudden, and I'll be honest with you, I've done it. You know, with Brendan Bouchard, I joined one of his things a couple of years ago. And I set an alarm because I wanted to get to that very last minute. I couldn't tell you why I did it. but it ended at midnight. I set the alarm. I ran in here and I got on at, 11:58 and I bought. And then I wondered why the heck I did that. I still don't know.
Well, I can even tell you, here's a tip to increase your sales. This will actually bump people's sales by 5 to 10% just doing this. Okay. And I just made the mistake again. I don't know why. I need to listen to my own advice sometimes. Okay. But the advice is, especially if you live on the East Coast, you think, okay, well, I'm going to close my special at midnight Eastern time. Don't do that. Close your special at midnight Pacific time. The reason being is that gives the Eastern time people 3 extra hours, and the Pacific time people are still thinking on midnight their time. What ends up happening is you miss out like 3 hours of sales at the very end when everybody's rushing in. So run your special to end using the specific time when you're running it. And I just didn't do that recently myself, running that own mistake because of that psychology that actually comes right. with, I think on our last podcast, I talked about the golden glove and the fifth finger of the golden glove, the reason to act now. And that deadline motivates your customers to like leap and, okay, this is my last chance. I'm going to miss out if I don't get this now. I'm going to miss out on this benefit. And you have so many people who come through. So be aggressive on email sequence. Every one of my clients, even if they don't send emails that frequently, I always make sure that they send an email the last, the second to last day. And then on the last day, we usually send a couple of emails on the last day of a special because we know people are going to rush in like the last 6 hours.
Right. Okay, I have to ask you real quick. I've been muting like crazy. Have you heard me coughing?
A little bit. We've heard you cough a little bit.
Ugh. I need another headset. If it's really bad, we can cancel because my voice is just leaving. If it's really bad, we can stop this and try again another time. Because I don't want people to listen to me coughing.
I think that it's kind of off in the background with this.
Even with my mute button. How strange.
Yep.
Well, if you hear a curse word, well, and you may, we'll try to avoid that. Oh, I am so sorry. I mean, today is just, and I never get sick, and I'm not sick now, but for some reason, I'm just coughing up a storm. We've had a lot of weather changes. I'm sure that has a lot to do with it. Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. So one of the things that I wanted to ask you about, and we were talking about Brendon Burchard, and I think it was, I've done it with both Brendon Burchard, and I've done it with Jeff Walker. I don't know why. And it's kind of interesting to do that. But one of the things that you said earlier about, people getting very upset because somebody left their list, I leave lists all the time, but I do try to leave a note, just as a courtesy, because people will somehow get a hold of my personal and private email address. I never register for any kind of interaction or newsletter from that address. I have, and I may have shared this with you before, I actually have a little junk email address I use for that. So, I go once a week and I go through all the ones that I want to look at and I unsubscribe from others. But when they come to my personal email address, I'm fairly testy about that. And I will send back a note and say, look, I never gave you permission and this is how I know. Now, if you want me, to pay attention to you, you need to not try to do this to me. Or I'll say, listen, thank you very much, but I'm already reading your stuff on another email address. That's the courteous thing to do. But I get, just as a business person, and because I'm overwhelmed with email, I do get pretty testy. So what do you tell people? Give us some advice on how not to piss people off. Let's just put it that way.
Well, you're not going to add – one thing that you don't do is you don't add people onto your email list who didn't specifically ask for your email list. Matter of fact, most of my websites where people subscribe – so I have opt-in forms everywhere, okay? Opt-in to my list. I always tell people to opt-in to my list everywhere. Most of my list, say you're going to get this freebie. You're also going to receive frequent emails showing you internet marketing tips, ways to increase your profits, ways to earn more, work less, enjoy life. So not only am I telling you that you're going to get this cheat sheet or whatever the promise is, but I also mentioned to you that you're going to be getting frequent emails about this topic. Mm-hmm. So that's on the page. And I found that advertising sources like Facebook and Google like that honesty up front on landing pages when you put it as well. So definitely make sure that you tell people, only take people who actually opt into the list. Don't just, grab lists and add them to your list. I do have to mention this. just in case that happens to you sometime. I'm sure most people did it themselves, but I've had people who actually went through and added me to a bunch of different people's lists. So there are jerks out on the online who might actually take your personal email and add you to other people's lists.
What is the purpose for that?
I think they're just being, well, you could ask what's the purpose of a lot of hackers. They're doing the same thing.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, so they enjoy causing trouble. But to not anger people who are on your list, one of the principles that I found is you need to make sure to, again, most people join my list because of whatever freebie I'm offering. So they join the list. The first email is going to mention the freebie. It's going to give them the freebie for download. I then, in my first email, also usually have a bulleted list of some of the other topics I'm going to have coming up. I use what I call benefit plus curiosity. They're little bullet points. Here's what you're going to be learning in the upcoming email. So in other words, here's your freebie, and then I sell them on staying on the list because a lot of people unsubscribe right after they get your freebie. So I do that right in the first email. I also like to have the very next email that you send mention the freebie again. Hey, you subscribe to this freebie, okay? Hopefully you received it. If you didn't, let us know. The reason is we're reminding them that, hey, you subscribed to my list to get this freebie because it's very easy for people to forget that they subscribed themselves. Another thing, now, I don't have this going on my main list right now because I don't need it, but when clients start having spam problems, in other words, they're advertising or people are actually complaining, hey, you're sending me spam, and I know that they're doing opt-in lists. So one of the things we'll do in those cases, we'll actually take their email, and I like simple emails, like very plain text emails. It looks like we're just sending a personal email to someone. But if we have those spam problems, we'll often take their photo, if we've used their photo somewhere, we'll take like their slogan, and we'll stick it in like a little banner header, and we'll put that up at the top of the email. The reason being is it basically brands them heavier very early on and almost gets that hook again. Okay, yes, I subscribed to this person. I saw his face on the landing page. I then subscribed to his list. It's kind of like that reminder. So that's the biggest thing I would tell people to do is make sure you remind people. And then probably two other big key principles is don't just promote. Have personality. It's almost like there's two ditches. There's just teaching, which people are happy with, but you don't sell anything. Then there's just promoting, nobody's happy with, but you sell some. You burn out a list quick. But the middle ground is to be personal, be a friend, be someone's buddy. Tell them, hey, here's my story. Here's some content to go with it. Here's something that'll help you. And then here's my offer. A good example is I would say probably some of the most effective emails that sell without selling are case studies. You tell a story about a client that you have. A case study by nature talks about the problem someone had, which might match the reader. You say a couple of things that you help them do. That's where content comes in. You give a couple of pieces of good, valuable content in the case study. This is what they did. You tell the end results, and then you go into the offer of how somebody else can get help like that. That's like a really effective model for an email. And even if I'm writing about myself, I use almost the same model. Hey, here's a little story I can tell. Sometimes my stories are as simple as, hey, I was talking to a client last week, and she asked me this question. And then I go on from there. Here's the question. That's how I start. And you know what? That little tip might help you with writing emails as well. Is you start with a story almost. Hey, I was talking to someone. Or, hey, someone sent me an email. Or, like, a recent email I just sent out. It was a pretty effective email. I wrote the fact that I took new clients a couple of weeks ago, and then one of the clients chose not to follow my advice and annoyed me over the first week, and so I refunded them and fired them as a client a week later. So I told people about that as my story. Here's what happened. Here's what we did. And that is actually a really effective email.
Listen, I think with any of us who are in this kind of arena, we've all fired clients, and sometimes you just have to. So I totally understand that. So I love the storytelling part of it. And you can do that, I mean, just outside of email as well. You can do that on Facebook or LinkedIn and, ask for help. So everything you're saying here doesn't necessarily have to be through email. It can also be through your social media accounts, can it?
It's pretty much every way that you contact people. I have like this little process I use. I just call it the authority architecture. It applies to email. That's where I first learned it. It applies to blogging. It applies to videos on YouTube. It applies to Facebook. It applies to everything we do because we're building – what we're really doing is we're building relationships as a friend because online, the internet is awesome. Okay, the internet is just awesome. The fact that we could buy anything from all over the world, but that also means we compete all over the world. And most of us are kind of tired of everything being so digital and not being able to get help anymore. So we need to. So as business owners, small business owners especially, we're going to do much better if we make personal connections. And as a small business owner who works from my home, I don't need millions and millions of customers to have a successful business. That means I don't need millions and millions of people to like me either. So I get to be, here's a little term I've kind of been using lately. I get to embrace my weirdness, which means I get to be myself. I get to tell my stories. If I want to send my internet marketing list a story about my German Shepherd puppy, I send a story about my German Shepherd puppy. Or whatever else that I want to talk about that fits me, embrace who you are because you're going to attract people like you. And, for example, this has been a few years back, which I'm glad it's been a long time since that happened. But I've, you know, when you have dogs, eventually your dog dies, okay? So I've actually, last couple of dogs that I had, I ended up at some point in time writing an email about, you know, my dog dying, usually within the next week after I've mentioned the fact that, hey, you know, my dog died. Sometimes I'll send pictures of him and stuff in those emails. Might not even sell in those emails. But the funny thing is they get the most responses. Mm-hmm. They get the most replies. They get the most people commenting. You get because you're making a personal connection with people, something that is like a shared human experience of, you know, of loss and, hey, here's something that's, you know, important to me in my personal life. And you become a real person instead of just somebody trying to sell them something.
Oh, exactly. And I think it's been proven beyond a shadow of a doubt that, you know, the most clicked on videos are of dogs and cats. And birds, you know, cockatoos, but dogs, cats, they win hands down every time. It's a huge industry, obviously, the pet industry. But, yeah, I've got cats and a dog. You can probably hear my, if you can hear me coughing, you can probably hear my dog snoring. I mean, she's just wiped out over there on her bed. She thinks my office is her bedroom, by the way.
I'm shameless with that because, like, I have a video that's actually one that I run ads with, and it worked well. And I take my German Shepherd puppy back when he was really little, and while I'm talking, I actually bring him up. There's a video clip of him up in the, you know, picture in picture on my video. So I'm doing a marketing video that I just bring him in, and I can't even remember. I say something about him there, you know, or like I have another video running on Facebook right now as a paid ad, and it basically introduces me. This is Terry Dean, and it says that he's a nerd, and he likes superheroes, something else, and German Shepherd puppies named Thor, and then it draws a picture of Thor, and that I do that whole little like spiel like 10 seconds before I even mention what I do. That's what I would call embracing my weirdness. For it, because I mentioned that I'm a nerd who likes superheroes and I have a German Shepherd puppy before I even talk about email marketing in it. And it's an email marketing video.
See, my kind of guy right there. I mean, that connects with so many people. And, you know, and I'm going to go back a bit because you started your business, you know, earlier than I did. I started mine around 2000, 2001. And remember, we didn't have GUI, graphical user interface. When you talk about your ugly website, I built dozens of those, and basically what we had was a colored background and, you know, choose your font color. That's pretty much what we had. In fact, I still have a picture of my very first website, and it was blue. That's all it was. It was blue. But we didn't have all the nifty-dicky things that we have now, graphical user interface. You know, we didn't have WordPress, of course, and I think MySpace might have been out there, but that was it. I mean, we're talking the dark ages practically in terms of internet marketing. But the thing is, once you start down this road, I lost my train of thought, what I was going to say. So then when it kind of evolved, and websites were very business-oriented, they were very dry, they were very dull, and everybody, I bet you remember this, everybody had that bank manager portrait. You know, if you go to the About page and you see somebody, male or female, in a suit, standing behind a leather chair with their hands on the chair, looking very stern. And then that's now gone. Nobody cares about that. Now people want to know about your dog, your cat, you know, what happened when your tree fell on your house. We want to know each other. So it really has been an evolution, hasn't it?
I don't know if it's an evolution. It's just us learning more of what works. Because even back when everybody was running those professional photos, I did a straight split test of it, of a photo of me in a suit versus me in shorts with my golden retriever. And the golden retriever, I tracked it. We had 10% higher response with the golden retriever on the page. So that's a straight.
How long ago was this?
I do not know the exact year. This is probably, that test was probably 2000, you know, somewhere between 2000 and 2004. Was probably when that specific test was, you know, so that would have been in the middle of the professional, everyone. And I even had people, it sounds kind of rude at first, but the person explained it. When I was at a conference, he came up to me, I wore a suit to the conference, and he came up to me and said, "You just do not look right in a suit." And he explained afterwards that it didn't fit my brand of being, you know, the internet lifestyle guy, and I was wearing a suit. And it was not me. It was not who I am. And that is something you also have to kind of fit, is what is your brand? Who are you? What do people recognize? Or probably one of the best compliments that I got on my emails early on was that people told me that they read my writing and they could hear me. If they heard me on audio or anything else, they could hear me talking. Or if they knew me, they could read my emails and they could hear it in my voice. It just sounded like me. And that's when you know that you're really sharing content correctly, when you can forget that you're speaking to thousands of people, and this is no matter where you're using it, forget you're speaking to thousands of people and speak to one person.
And so I like that because it's true. I mean, I listen to, let's just say Mel Robbins, you know, I'm on her list and I get her little emails and I watch her little videos. And when I say, and I've got it written up on my board, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. If anybody knows who Mel Robbins is, she wrote that book and she talks about get up and do it. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. I don't do that in my own voice. I do it in hers. So I know exactly what you're talking about.
Well, see, I've also done copywriting at times. And if I've right now, even I have a lot of clients who ask me to help them write their emails, and we might do it over a phone call and something like this, and we'll write up a whole email. I've gotten good enough at knowing clients that I can often write in their voice now. So that means, you know, I get to know them and I can write what, you know, sounds like them. You kind of get to know them and you could write what sounds like them. It's funny. This is some time back too, but one of my clients, he ran a contest. He's British. He's from the UK. And he ran a contest telling people to write an email like him. And it was a riot. He said it was such a riot because he went and they said things like crikey. And they all made sure that he had all these phrases he used that are British phrases. And they made sure they put them all throughout the email when he brought them in. He said he was just laughing when he read the contest entries.
And see, that happens. You know, I do the same thing with my social media clients. I am so good at writing and speaking in their voice that I actually had one client. He was a client for about 10 years until he retired. And I was on his Facebook page. This was pre-Hootsuite. This was pre-when you could automate it. You had to actually go do it. And I didn't realize that he had actually gone into Facebook because I didn't even know you how. And he had turned on the little chat box. And all of a sudden, this little chat pops up and it's his nephew. He's like, "Hi, uncle," you know, blah, blah, blah. And I had to have a little bit of an argument with him that I was not his uncle. He got pretty offended that his uncle was saying all these really neat things all over the internet and it wasn't his uncle. So I had to warn my client, you're going to have a bit of a family problem. Here's how you deal with it. I said, this guy was like, "Are you sure?" I mean, I'm positive. I know exactly what you mean, but I've never forgotten that and now if I have to go into a client Facebook page, I make sure that chat is off. I do not want to be talking with their people. It happens. So with the email you've given us some really great ideas, and I'm on your list, so I know what you're talking about. You know, I read them and I know who Thor is, and so I totally get it. So let's switch a little bit to systems, though, because a lot of people, and I did this, Terry, when I first started out, I hung up my shingle on Facebook, and it just went nuts, and I grew, and I grew, and I was not prepared for growth. I had no systems, and when I had to go back and put systems into place, I cried. It was a lot of work. So what do you tell clients about what systems they need? And, you know, because obviously if they don't have them, they're going to be working far harder than they should, right?
They really are. It kind of depends on what systems we need to put in place, what needs to be done. I always go back to the old three-word phrase where we need to eliminate, automate, and then delegate. So those are the three steps we always have to look at. So first of all, is there anything we should just completely eliminate? You don't need to be doing it all. And there, some cases we'll find that there's certain things that you're doing that are wasting time. And that goes back, that's kind of a deep discussion, but it goes back to the 80-20 rule. What is the 20% that's creating 80% of your results? We look at it. We discuss it. We look at clients' results like the last few months or the last year. You know, what's the best thing that you did last year? What have you spent a lot of time or money on that didn't pan out? And we can, like, remove those. So you look at those first. Then you really got to think about, okay, what can I do to automate this or make this easier? And a lot of times I create systems for myself first. And sometimes they're as simple as copywriting. When I sat down to do copywriting, a lot of times I used to think, well, you know, copywriting is like an art. You got to come up with this great idea. And now I pretty much have a process that I go through. I have a system I do for research. So I want to research the market, find out what people are doing. And I have a very specific process I go through, which are several steps. Like I'll go to Amazon and I'll look at reviews on Amazon and I'm looking for specific things there. I'll look on Twitter. I'll do searches on Twitter. I'll go into some forums, and I'll look in those areas when I'm researching the market. I'll look at competitors. And I actually have a sheet where I have these listed of the research methods I'm using. And then I'll go to the next step, which is coming up with an offer idea. And I did the same thing there. I basically created a sheet. Here's my irresistible offers. Here's 8 steps to an irresistible offer I use for myself. Okay, so I just run myself through my own steps. And then I'll do the same thing. I use the golden glove, which I teach. Okay, here's my beginning of my sales copy. I'm going to actually outline the golden glove. When I do those steps, putting the copy together becomes really easy, but there's checklists I use for myself first. And then, see, the nice thing of doing it for yourself first is once you put those systems together for yourself first, now I can delegate and I can teach someone else to do the system. I don't want to do that because it would kind of mess. I don't want to manage a bunch of copywriters. Or writers, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do it. But if I wanted to, I would take the same sheets. I would train the copywriters to follow this model, to go through it. You know, you're going to follow this sheet, then you're going to follow this process, then you're going to follow this system I put together. It's the same system that I'm using. And that would be how we put together the system. So it really comes, we automate first, then we delegate. And that little example applies to anything that we want to do or anything that we are doing. Like, for example, I find a lot of clients, they waste a lot of their day because they don't know what they're doing. They kind of come in and I'm going to do something today. And that's what they're thinking. So we plan out their schedule. We plan out exactly what they're going to do each day of the week or what they're going to do. We usually have some open periods for taking care of problems, things like that. That's the funny thing is people do their schedules and they assume everything's going to go right. I do my schedule, and I assume that all kinds of things are going to go wrong. Mm-hmm. So I usually have empty spaces. I have a couple hours that I don't have anything scheduled, which if nothing goes wrong, I can work on the next day's work in those couple of hours. But I assume something's going to go wrong. I don't know why I'm like this. Some people claim their success by always thinking good thoughts. I would tell you I'm successful because I always think bad thoughts, which is I'm always thinking of how is this going to break, and I'm going to figure out how to fix it before it breaks. Because I'm planning for it to break. And that's from 22 years of internet experience. It always breaks. It always breaks.
Well, it does. And, you know, I tried this, and you probably did too. You know, I set up my Google Calendar. I think it was the first of last year. And I blocked out time. This is for web development. This is for social media marketing. This is for my working on my business. And I would have a lunch break. You know, good for me. I took a lunch break. And I found out within about 2 weeks that what I needed to do with that calendar was eliminate everything on it, because with the best will in the world, something is going to go wrong. It may just go a little bit sideways, or it's going to go profoundly wrong. And I call those, you know, I have big blocks now in my mind, basically, but I have big blocks now where I'm not scheduled to do anything, and I call that my stomping out fires time, because it's going to happen. It's just going to happen.
it's going to happen. I mean, it could be any weird thing that ends up happening. It could be the worst things, you know, happen at some point. It's you're running those big specials we talked about earlier, and the shopping cart breaks. That means you're on the phone with everybody to get it fixed at that moment. That happens. So we have those buildings. We do the calendars like this. But then when they're doing something, again, we want to come in and they create the systems for themselves first, and then they delegate it out. Now, there's another process, and this is something a lot of people don't talk about, and I found it really valuable, is I have a lot of clients who are growing fast. And so, like, I'm not going to say what industry he's in, but, like, one client did, like, $300,000 in 2016. 2017, he did $800,000 in sales for this business. So that's growing really fast in the business. And when you're growing like that, you're going to end up bringing in a couple team members. And we have this concept. I don't know where we got it. Maybe it was from the E-Myth or whatever else that they got it, but they didn't fully understand it, that the people who took from that information. They get this concept that they need to create all the systems in advance before they bring someone in. I have yet to have any client who hired someone and had all their ducks in a row and all their systems in place when they hired the person. That has not happened yet for anyone, including with my help on their side. So that's never happened, okay, because – we can never get the entrepreneur to actually put together all the systems that new employee needs. What usually happens, and this is part of growing, is you will go through a time where you bring someone in to help, and it's a mess. Okay? If you're someone who has to have everything in order, nothing is confusion, there's no confusion whatsoever anywhere, it's really hard to be an entrepreneur like that. You're probably going to need a partner at some point who can handle the confusion and the messes that come in. So we bring someone in. It's kind of a mess in the beginning. They train the person. And in many cases, we've done best by them bringing in somebody who is skilled. I mean, not necessarily do they know the subjects. Let's say we wanted to bring somebody in that we're going to teach to run our Facebook advertising. We have good, effective Facebook ads. We want to grow on it. You know, we might hire someone who already has Facebook advertising experience and bring them in. Or we might hire somebody who's a beginner at it, but they have a really good attitude. They have good technical skills. Like one of my clients, he actually had a process, and he had a business that was a done-for-you business. They managed pay-per-click accounts. They managed SEO for clients. They did content for the clients and in a vertical industry. And his process was he liked to hire new graduates who came out of some technical degree but didn't have any experience. That's who he really liked to hire, because then his team could train the person. He knew that they had skills. He knew that they were usually dedicated and really wanted to grow in a new company. And they could train them the process that they used. They found that if they brought somebody else who already had the skill, like we brought Facebook advertising, they had bad habits they brought with them that he didn't like. So we train them the system. And usually we have that smart employee. The owner teaches the employee, and he asks the employee to put together the system for it. And they go back and forth, so they actually create the first systems together for that position. They're not created in advance when they first get started. And see, that's kind of a mistake, is so people don't get anywhere because they think they're going to get it all done in advance. And I haven't seen it happen yet.
Well, not only does it happen, but it also goes back to that whole perfectionism thing, which is really procrastination by another name. So you're going to try to get perfection, and you're going to be a year down the road going, why aren't I making any money? Well, you haven't launched.
Yes, you haven't launched. You haven't done anything. You're busy putting out $10 an hour fires.
Right. That's exactly right. So, and, you know, going back to, you know, these people who you maybe want to hire a virtual assistant or even an OBM, which is a little bit early in the process, I have found that they go through a lot of people because they're expecting mind reading, which is the honest to God truth. You know, a lot of new VAs will come to me and say, you know, this client seems so nice and I really enjoyed working with him or her, but oh my gosh, you know, now they're being mean to me, which people can. And, you know, they're saying that I don't know what I'm doing. Well, have they told you what they want? No, I'm supposed to just know it. So my best advice to people who want to work with a team or a virtual assistant is, like Terry says, don't try to build everything out, but be patient and work together. That's the most important thing you can do. You know, we can't read each other's minds at all.
It's sad, but as entrepreneurs, we have perfectionist tendencies. We all do.
We do. That's why I said that.
You eventually get
one of those flaws.
You know, we eventually. if you're in this business long enough, you partly get it beaten out of you. that's probably the best term for it. Eventually, it's going to be beaten out of you, that perfectionism, if you're going to be successful. But we're so hard on other people that we bring in. Like, here's something that it's kind of hard to say. This is another one that we realized with one of my clients is when we brought in people to do what he was doing, we actually found it took 3 employees to replace him in the company. So it took three people to do what he was doing. Partly that was because he was overworking himself. So he was overwhelming himself. But partly it's because you had to teach him, no one's ever as motivated about your business as you are. Okay? Mm-hmm. You have to accept that when you bring in other people, that they're going to be really good at what they do. And you'll find that too. A year or two later, you're going to be wondering how in the world you ever lived without them, because they're better at it than you are, because you eventually handed it off. But you have to embrace, we'll say that 3 months, this is true whether you hire an employee or you hire a virtual assistant, you're going to have probably at least 3 months there where it's uncomfortable. I guess we get to circle all the way back around to our beginning. I don't know if growing is ever comfortable. So as you outsource, whatever you bring someone in, so we're insourcing, we're outsourcing, whatever we're doing, you're going to have a period of 3 to 6 months it's uncomfortable. That's just the way it is.
That's exactly right. Or in some cases that I've heard of, absolutely miserable. But if you persevere and you finally start to actually converse instead of you know, you as the entrepreneur shooting over an email and telling somebody, do this, do this, do this, and don't ask for input, you're going to have problems. One of the best ways that I found very early on to work with my team is to give them their head. Ask questions. Yes, you know, ask how they can help me. Because they are doing, look, I don't ask my team to do anything that I can't already do, because I am like you. I'm a nerd in stilettos. But I hate Infusionsoft. I'd rather be hit by a beer truck than work in Infusionsoft. Seriously, I can do it. I don't want to do it. So I have a great team that does that work. And honestly, I'll go to them and say, whoever's working on whatever project, this is what the client needs. This is what I think needs to happen. What do you suggest? And they come back with things that I would have never thought of, because this is where they specialize, right? So let them do it.
And that's the same reason that you'll find it better to get the team member and let them create some of the systems. You create it's almost like it's a team effort to create the systems. They're going to be much better than if you did it yourself.
That's exactly right. But you have to go through that kind of honeymoon period. And it's difficult, and so many new virtual assistants and so many entrepreneurs new to kind of building a team get very frustrated, and I mean nasty frustrated sometimes. And I just want to tell them, be calm. Ask, you know, I mean, it may be that you've got somebody who's a bad fit for you. It happens. Fire each other. You know, start over, but don't get nasty. I mean, you're working your way through, you're building a relationship. You're building a working relationship. Getting ugly with somebody is not going to get you very far.
Well, it's, you know, that's been a theme of today's podcast, is the fact that it's a relationship. It's all a relationship. Everything we
exactly.
do in business is.
That's exactly right. We only have about 2 minutes. Do you have time to talk about the best way for a beginner to get started, or should that be another show? Preferably where I've got coffee all over you.
That'll probably have to be another show, because 2 minutes doesn't really give us a whole lot of time. I mean, the quickest way to get started, I would tell people, is to choose a market. And I don't even have time to go into how I choose a market. I don't tell people to just go after their passion in it. But, you know, get a market, and I would tell them to start building an audience first. Start building a list. Start participating in social media in that subject. Mm-hmm. You know, start writing some content, and that's the very beginning piece. And I'm going to throw in, you know, 2 minutes left, I'll throw in my quick commercial, and that is go over to mymarketingcoach.com. Pick up my free report, 7 Unique Ways to Create Profitable Emails. Even if you're not a writer, it will show you 7 ways, and I'll give it a little secret here. It's going to show you 7 ways to do stories, 7 different types of stories that you can use in email, and I'll even give you 64 story shortcuts as a cheat sheet with it. You can go over and pick that up for free over on My Marketing Coach, and the same tips, just like we said earlier, they apply to email, they apply to social media, they apply to creating videos or whatever else, other type of content you're producing. They'll show you how to sell without selling. So it's mymarketingcoach.com. I hope you're okay with my short commercial.
Oh, yeah. And I was going to say, absolutely. And I was actually going to say that link is in the show notes. So I definitely want people to go over and grab that. Terry, thank you so much. It has been a pleasure speaking with you today, and I really do want you to come back because I think this will be a great lead-in for how does a beginner get started online. And if you don't mind coming back in a month or two, I would really appreciate it.
Okay, we can schedule for that.
All right. We've done this before. Well, listen, thank you so much. And I thank the audience for being here, and I thank you for all of the wonderful tips and advice that you've shared with our audience. And I'll see you again soon.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.